Hello, all you Patreon subscribers, or as we should call you, all of our wonderful insiders. We'd like to welcome you to the Deep Cuts session. So let's do a little bit of housekeeping. This is kind of the awkward moment in the room where we're like, what's going on here? So we were originally doing extended cuts for our Patreon subscribers. What we found was that there was actually, we're not sure if there was as much quality that we thought we were getting. And so what we decided to do was say, you know, Brian runs through this show at a very fast clip and is like moving me along all the time. And that's the benefit of doing this via podcast is you don't see all the fingers and the hand motions that he's making to me. So what we wanted to do was say, okay, there's a couple of stories here that we actually keep going on once the recording light goes off. So, hey, why not continue the conversation? We'll record it. We'll throw it on a feed for all of our insiders. So that's what we're doing. We're calling it the deep cuts, you know, like those hidden gems you find. Brian, do people actually like go through record crates anymore, or is that a completely outdated reference?
Oh, it takes a special kind of nerd to go through record crates, but I might be one of those. I'm more that way about comic books though than I am records. But yeah, looking for those deep cuts, looking for this. I mean, this is, you know, we talked about dimming the lights and kicking on the slow jams. I think we might actually really need to start doing that, because that's kind of what this is. This is going to be just kind of a sit around and chat with Brant and Brian. When we were talking earlier in the week about it, I said, okay, so the main show is kind of like sitting in the foyer with us. There's not a lot of time before we got to get to the next class, because we're already skipping Sunday school as it is, sitting out in the foyer because, you know, we've used our two-year-old as an excuse. Oh, she's too squirmy in there, so I'm going to go sit out in the foyer. And then another dad or whatever kind of joins us and sits on the couch with us, and then we just start kind of yucking it up. And before you know it, we're talking about the current topics and all this stuff. That's kind of what our main show is. It's kind of foyer talk with Brant and Brian. But, you know, then we get to the deep cuts, which is kind of like if we invited you over for our barbecue, right? It's kind of like you get to really just hang out with us, cut loose a little bit. You know, I can't say we're going to pass the beers around because that's not what we do, but yeah, we're going to maybe loosen up a little bit.
So here's what I'm thinking. It's kind of like being invited to a David Bokovoy smoked meat extravaganza.
That's a deep cut right there. That's a deep cut. Nobody's going to understand that reference outside of like four people that watch the show. That's how deep we're getting here.
That is the insider baseball. So, okay. So you're talking about that. We've actually got, we coined this, and I will fully admit, I have not gone to Sunday school in, I think I'm going on 10 years. Now.
10 years.
I just haven't gone for one reason or another. Like that's the benefit of being in the youth organization is I'm always got something that I'm trying to do during Sunday school. But even when I wasn't, and then before that, when I was a ward clerk, it was the same thing. I've always got something I was doing. What started as a moral stand against just the dirt worst teacher I've ever seen, someone who thought he was a lot smarter than he really was, has just turned into like, it's kind of my thing. People are used to it right now. As a matter of fact, we have this group that kind of hangs out in our cultural, and not the cultural hall, but like the overflow area. And the bishop has affectionately referred to it as alternative Sunday school. I'm always back there and I'm usually ranting and raving about something, and he'll poke his head in and go, oh yeah, it looks like Brant's leading alternative Sunday school. So
you know, I teach in the primary, so I'm not in Sunday school anymore. But even when I was in Sunday school, I'm going to be honest with you, I was never really in Sunday school. Like my body was there, right? My body was physically there, but my mind was usually on whatever I had on my Kindle at that time, which was usually like a journal of Book of Mormon history or like the latest issue of Dialogue or a book that I'd had on Kindle, because it's more discreet that way than sitting there with, you know, Mike Quinn's, you know, you know, Extensions of Power sitting in my lap or something.
You've seen my my Snacks of Sunday that I post on Facebook.
Oh, you bring that stuff.
It is interesting because I get so many people who, and we're doing this over video, so it might be hard to see, but they'll cock their head to the side and they'll kind of try and get a look at it and, okay. And it's funny because I have so many people who think that, wow, you devour those 600-page books every single week, huh? Yeah, I do. That's how well-read I am. I do that every single week. So,
well, then he follows up with, well, I'm interviewing the author this week, so have to prepare.
So that's the thing. We were going to talk about the Uchtdorf thing, but I got to get this off my chest. I don't know about you. How many people know, aside from your immediate family, how many people do you know, how many people know that you do the show outside of like listeners and people on Facebook, like people that you wouldn't think?
how many people that I wouldn't think that, okay. So I did go to,
this is the reason why it's like off script. And
right. I did go to a conference that was hosted by the Church History Department for the latest Joseph Smith Papers release. And I was surprised at how many people said, oh yeah, yeah, we've been listening to your show. I mean, these are people who have known me for years, right? These are people who I interned with, when I was there. And so we've kept in touch since then, but I was surprised that there was like three, four, I mean, that's to me, I guess that's huge, but there was like three, four people that were like, oh yeah, we listened to your show. And these are people who work for the Church History Department, the people who are involved with the Joseph Smith Papers. So it made me feel good. I'm like, yeah, we're really geeky and, you know, we just get into things and yeah.
I'm going to take that as a compliment. I'll say this. So I'm not saying that I'm a different person on the show than I am in real life. I'd like to think that I'm like, what you see is what you're going to get with me, but I get really weird sometimes when people approach me at church being like, you do that show, you do, cause I'm just kind of like, huh? Yeah. Okay. So what did I say to piss you off this time? Cause I probably did something like that. And I'm never sure of that. And then people want to talk with me and it's like, okay, so, like, do you want like the real me, like what I say on the show? Or do you want like the more toned down version of me? I'd like to think on the show, I take my personality and I kind of crank it up to 11. And my poor wife, this is what she has to deal with every day. But at church, I'm more like down at about a 4 or a 5. And so every once in a while, I get a couple people needling me being like, so, what do you think about Nelson? Huh? And it's like, ah, boy, how do you want me to answer that?
You want my official review or yeah, that's funny. You know, so when it comes to my ward, however, I don't know. Maybe I'm one of those like, and I know that I am. I'm one of those like back of the chapel, back pew kind of Mormons that takes the first exit out as soon as the closing hymn ends. It's like done out, and I'm heading down the hallway. Of course, I'm in primary for the rest of the time, so nobody gets to talk to me about anything. And then it's like as soon as primary is over, boom, out to the car. Kids, get in the car. We're out. You know, that's so. Not only do people not know that I do this show, people don't even know that I'm in the ward, to be honest with you.
I mean, you're kind of in your own little bubble with the primary. That's the downs, either the good thing or the bad thing. Like you're off in your own world, so you're not exposed to a lot of other people. You just got your little kiddies that you're dealing with. It's kind of like that a little bit for me in the youth program. I'm in my own world out there, but I don't know. Usually I'm fighting with parents on a weekly basis or something like that. So, okay. So let's enough with the navel gazing. We got to get to something that I think we got to get into. So I think we need to talk a little bit more about this Uchtdorf assignment, because it's something that I think is going to have, Brian, I hope I'm not putting too much in this, because there's a part of me that's like, man, this could have some reverberating effects for like what's going to happen for the future of the church, or Uchtdorf kind of gets eaten up by the machine and his influence really isn't felt.
Yeah. Yeah, so let me do a comparison here to Rick Turley. Now, not a lot of people know who Rick Turley is, but he was our assistant church historian for quite some time, and he was a very influential person within the history department. The Mountain Meadows Massacre book that was done through Oxford Press, that was a Rick Turley project, and he continues doing a lot of Mountain Meadows massacre work, and also this new history project that's coming out, which they started posting now on LDS.org. That was a Rick Turley project initially. And the Women of Faith in the Latter Days that we interviewed Brittany Chapman over, that was a Rick Turley project. He's very aware of like women's history and on pretty progressive things within the church history department. And I say progressive, not necessarily left-leaning, but progressive meaning stuff that 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the church probably wouldn't have been okay with having open discussion about. So here's where I'm going to tie this into Uchtdorf. He was moved from being the assistant church historian to being now the director of our public relations department. And he's a ghost. I hate to say it. He's probably doing some good things there that I'm not aware of.
He could have been involved with a Love Loud Festival thing and making a position there. He could have, and again, I'm not saying that hits him directly, but I know that a lot of what comes out of the newsroom is going to come out of public affairs. So I look at some of the stuff that we talked about in our year of review. So you look at August just in general. You had statements on Charlottesville. You had statements on Love Loud, and maybe that's him, yeah. Or maybe not. I don't know.
So what I'm thinking with Uchtdorf, And this isn't a bad thing. What I'm thinking with Uchtdorf is that we're going to see the slow trickling of more Again, I don't want to use the word progressive as a political ideology, but as a term of kind of moving forward on some of the things that we've been a little gun shy about. We're going to see a little bit more kind of slowly integrated into our seminary, into our into the institute, into our general Sunday school. And it's not going to be a big rush. It's not going to be a big flood, but you're going to see just little things here and there that are just going to catch your attention and say, oh, that's good. Oh, I'm glad that they're starting to bring that up. Oh, they phrased that in a pretty decent way. Oh, they finally got rid of that stupid Thomas B. Marsh story about the milk strippings. Oh, good. You're going to see things like that, and you're not going to know that Uchtdorf had anything to do with it. And so we're all going to assume, oh, look, Uchtdorf's a ghost, just like Rick Turley. And just like you said, maybe he's behind the scenes saying, guys, we, and I can't do a German accent, but guys, I think he's really Austrian, isn't he?
Or something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Guys, we need to kill the Marsh story, okay? We need to kill the milk stripping story. It could be.
Well, and I think maybe that's the problem with the term of progressive, is because people use it in such a political context. But maybe we're not going to see as much retrenchment. Maybe we're going to see him pushing the church forward in a few areas, because I'm also thinking about things like, some of the statements that we covered from Ballard recently when he did his face-to-face and when he did his BYU devotional. I still stand very firmly in the sense of, we have seen a shift in Ballard over the last 2 years. So now we're seeing the shift in Ballard over some issues, whether it comes to historical issues or issues on Mormons and the LGBT community. And now we're seeing Uchtdorf in this position. And so it gives me a little bit of optimism to look at things and say, oh, maybe we're going to see things differently. But I think that's going to be the problem. We're not going to be able to see it until we look back 10 years and go, oh, wow, look at all that happened. But you brought up one thing that made me wonder. I would assume that Turley was probably involved with the Gospel Topics essays to some extent, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was involved with that project, yeah.
And I think that is one of those things that we're looking back. It's been 5 years since the first one was released, and I wish they would be more impactful, but I still think that it's one of the more important things that has happened to the church in the last 5 years, is putting those out there. I actually had someone contact me today saying, hey, you know, he knows that I read way too much and wanted some book recommendations. And I sent a few over his way. And he was telling me, he's like, I really, really like the church essays. And I really wish that the church essays would have been like, you know, 5 or 10 times bigger than they actually are. They felt like a little bit. And he's a younger guy. He's probably about 26, maybe 27. And I'm sitting here going, okay, that's an area that might be valuable, and we won't see the effects of that for another 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. And of course you responded and said, well, just dig into those footnotes and you'll have plenty to read.
Well, let's see. What did I recommend? So let me see, Brian, if this passes your historian muster here. So he's reading Rough Stone Rolling. He's about halfway through.
I said, okay. Excellent book.
I said, what are you interested in? He said, I really like the Joseph Smith era of Mormonism. And I was like, okay, so if you're reading Rough Stone Rolling, you're just starting to get into it, because that's usually where people go. And he said he started with the Gospel Topics essay. So I was like, okay. So the three that I recommended to him were the McKay biography, the Arrington biography, and the Kimball biography, and the Turner Brigham Young biography. Those were the first. I said, you need to, Brigham Young is going to cover basically early Utah. And the Brigham Young years. That's important. McKay's going to cover about 1935 to about 1965, which is a really monumental year in Mormonism. Arrington's going to cover about 70 to 80, maybe even 70 to 85 or 90. And Kimball's going to cover about 65, 70 till about 85. Mm-hmm. So you're going to cover most of the big influential years of Mormonism.
Yeah.
So
let me ask,
did it pass your muster as far?
Yeah,
as-
yeah. No, I think you have some good choices there. I think I would probably add a couple to that reading list: Mormonism in Transition, which would cover the early 20th century part, that component. You know, because we don't have a good biography of like Grant, of Heber J. Grant, there is a biography in the works of Joseph F. Smith by Steve Taysom that's going to be just off the walls. So that'll be an excellent biography coming out.
That's going to cover what, like turn of the century, right?
Yeah, it's going to cover turn of the century and really up to 2019, something like that, 1919. So we really need a good Heber J. Grant biography from somebody. And I know that, I mean, Ron Walker would have been the guy to do that, but he passed away. I would love if somebody could get into his notes, because he has tons of stuff on Grant and the Grant era, and dig in and just write a good biography. So that would be good. Also, another book that I'd recommend is probably Mormon Enigma.
If he was interested in the Joseph Smith era, that
right. I really, really think that it's important to understand Emma's story in this. I mean, it's a heartbreaking story for her, but it's something that I think complements Bushman's work very well, by providing an alternate perspective on a lot of the things that that Bushman discusses.
You know, I wish that they would come out, and I don't want to. I wish that they would come out with another edition for 2018, almost to re-release it and say, hey, by the way, guys, this is still just as valid, and you know, maybe update a few footnotes here and there.
Right.
But it almost needs to be brought into the modern era, because I don't think that many people know about it. The other one that I wish I would have recommended was Bowman's Mormon People.
Right, yeah. And to me, that's the first place to go. Yeah. Right. If you want a good broad overview in one book that's about 300 pages, very reader friendly, very easy to find for cheap, because it's Penguin Books, so they print stuff for pennies, so you can find it for dollars. That's the great book to go to. And also, they have it if you're an Audible person, they've got it on Audible too. So that's always my first go-to, is the Mormon People. I would like to say, and here's our hot take, my hot take anyway, I would like to say that the new history that the church is producing, the new four-volume history that they're producing, would be my go-to on this. But I've already read the first 8 chapters, and it's probably not going to remain my go-to on this. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, it's written for a Deseret Book audience, right?
Well, and if I understand it correctly, if they're writing it with the intention of making it available to all members, usually they're going to write it at about a 6th grade level, because that's easy to translate, and you're not going to get into too much difficult areas where it's trying to describe concepts in different languages.
Right. And I think it's understandable, particularly with an international church, and it's applaudable, actually, that they want to get this story out as far as possible by being able to translate into, I think they said initially, 16 languages. So I applaud them for that. And I know that they have to write it at a certain level to do that. But if somebody comes to me and says, I really want to have an unfiltered view, understanding of Mormon history, and I want, people always say this, I just want to know the truth, right? And that's always like, well, it depends on how the historian is able to piece it together and their interpretations of the historical
truth.
It gets really messy. But if you want to get something that's a little bit more, I guess you can say, unafraid of broaching difficult topics, I would probably still recommend Matthew Bowman's book. Likewise, I think that... Even a Deseret Book publication, Story of the Latter-day Saints, that was done back in, what was it now, like 74 or something like that?
Yeah, it was Arrington and...
No, it wasn't Arrington. That was a Mormon Experience. This was Glenn Leonard.
Oh, Leonard, that's what it was.
It was Leonard, and I want to say it was a Dean May, James Allen. It was Leonard and James Allen that did this. And that's actually, I hate to say it, but that's actually still a better, more in-depth look at a lot of topics than the new history is. So, under one one volume. So I would probably still recommend those.
So since we're geeking out about Mormon things, and this will be the last thing on my list, you had mentioned back in the summer that you went to the Fair Conference representing Coford Books, shilling your books like you do, and that you were actually very impressed with it. So this last week, there was something interesting that happened. I'm always on the lookout for new and different, new and different Mormon podcasts. I it's something that I've always been interested in. And so I think I had the Fair podcast feed in my podcast queue, and I really didn't pay much attention. They hadn't been putting much stuff out. It didn't do it much for me. But in the last couple of weeks, they put out 2 podcasts from their Fair conference this year. One of them was on the Book of Mormon and maybe it wasn't the Book of Mormon. It was more on like Mormon history and what are we doing with it and how do we interpret it? And the other one, Let me pull it up here really quick. The other one, while I'm thinking about it, was Ben Spackman basically talking about the young earth creationism and how we interpret that within Mormonism.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the presentations that was given there that really stood out for me. I didn't watch a lot of them. I was out working the vendor booth, but I did sneak in for Ben's, and I thought it was a fantastic presentation. Now they released his presentation there on the on their podcast, but also Ben Spackman went on to LDS Perspectives and discussed a lot of those ideas there as well. So he's doing some good.
Here's the one that I was trying to remember. Keith Erickson, Witnessing the Book of Mormon, the Testimonies of the 3, 8 and Millions. And it was great because, so Keith is the director of the Church History Library for the LDS Church. And it was great because it was basically like, all right, let's talk about critical thinking when it comes to history. And how do we begin to go down this road? Now, I will say this, these presentations, Erickson's presentation, there was a couple of things that he said that I was like, you were doing so good. You didn't have to throw a cheap shot at like the CES letter. I get why he did it, but he didn't have to do it. But everything else was like, okay, let's talk about doing a little bit of myth busting. This is how we do it a little bit. Let's look at what the text actually says. Let's look at some of these other things that we have within our own cultural mindset of what did the 3 and the 8 witnesses say, do, what did they not do? It was great. And I'm sitting here going, whoa, this isn't your dad's fair where we're going to take one sentence out of an entire article and basically say, this is the reason why you can't take this article seriously, because this one sentence. This was to a faithful, believing audience, but it was, in essence, trying to raise the level of discourse with what they're talking about and how they're approaching history and these topics from a faithful perspective. And I was very impressed because it's not what I was used to.
Yeah, no, I've told you before that I've been pretty consistently impressed with the curation of the Fair Mormon conference, and I'm not one who considers myself to be entirely in the apologetic circle camp. I have a lot of empathy for what they do, but the Fair Mormon conference has stood above, I think, what a lot of people assume apologetics to be all about. They've gotten a lot of great speakers in there, like Paul Reeve, for instance, came in and spoke. Patrick Mason came in and spoke. They've got some good stuff. So anyway, now that we've geeked out about this enough, I want to geek out with a person who just stopped by. I think she was just in the neighborhood and just stopped by. I think if she can hear us, Miss Gerilyn Hasselpool herself has just wandered into the studio. Gerilyn, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh my goodness. Now, we can't see you, Gerilyn, but that's not a problem because I think that we're just going to release this on audio.
Well, that's good because for some reason my camera's not working, which is going along with my week.
So, Gerilyn, let's get the really important. I have two very important and pressing questions that I need to get through.
Yes.
Question number one: where are we at with the Jeffrey Poole Death Watch?
We are probably within the next 12 hours. We will go to the emergency room.
Oh, okay. So it is actually serious. Oh, well, that kind of backfired on me.
It's as serious as it ever is.
Okay. So it's a normal day in the life of Jeffrey Poole, basically.
Nobody prays for his death more than his wife.
So let me ask you question number two. Last time you were on with us, it was sipping NyQuil out of a straw. So on the sobriety index, where are we today?
Oh, I'm sober as a church person.
Oh. Sober as a Mormon, I see.
No, I would not
sober American fork.
I'm sober American fork. No, you know that you've heard that joke though. Why do you always take two Mormons fishing? Because if you take one, he'll drink all your beer.
Yeah, but that's not a joke. That's reality in my experience.
So yeah, so I would never.
And I'm usually the one bringing the beer too. And I'm like, come on, guy, really?
Yeah. Oh, speak of the devil, Jeff Poole has arisen.
Poole has arisen. Well, let's get your. Oh, we've got some conversation going on here. Gerilyn, what we would like to do is get your take a little bit. We talked earlier in our main show today about Josh Weed's story, Josh and Lolly Weed's story, and I know we both know that you're close with Josh and with his wife. And we just kind of wanted to get your take on mostly not what's happening with them, because we all know what's happening with them. And quite frankly, it's none of our business what's happening with them, except for the fact that they issued a public statement. So they're willing to let people talk about it. But I just kind of want to get your feedback on what are you seeing as a reaction to what they put out there? And what are your concerns about any sort of reaction that you're seeing? And basically put us in our place. Like, what should we be, how should we be handling this? Educate us.
It's obviously a story. It's something that is being passed around in various social circles. And Brian and I talked about KUTV just completely crapped the bed with their coverage of this story. It was basically a bunch of bullet points. And as we were talking, it was just like, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah. So, you know, the two of them, this is like it's a story of evolution, right? It's a story of two people who have tried really desperately to work things out. And, you know, their story 5 years ago when they first came out, their story got used in really ugly ways by members of the church and leadership of the church.
Can I just tell you real quick, Geralyn? I did literally get family members sending me links to that article, you know, with kind of the, and my family never does stuff like that. I'm not in one of those families that sends links to each other, but I do remember a link going around, and it was the, you know, marry straight and it'll all be great message.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got those too. I got those from lots of people like, hey, you should send this out to all your gay friends and they can, and I understand people, they're well-meaning, but you know, the thing is that got used to put a lot of people in really damaging and destructive relationships. And there's a lot of pain that it was caused. And Josh and Lolly have also evolved from that space, obviously, and recognized that they had a part in hurting a lot of people. And while that was not their intention, we all know that intention is irrelevant. So anyway, so they felt like, so here's the thing, like, there are lots of people who are going to process this in ways, and there's a lot of pain and heartache. And there's also a lot of people who are in mixed orientation marriages who are feeling like, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my marriage? So there's a lot of because it's such a public thing, there's a lot of processing happening. And I think the best thing we can do is just validate people's fears and sadness and just sit with them and say, this sounds like a really hard thing for you. And let it be that.
So, Geralyn, one thing that you posted on Facebook, and I was just reading, you had a very touching Facebook post, especially because you recognize that even where your shortcomings were with it, and you went back in and sort of edited it and added some. So, I mean, all of us are trying to work this out, right? And trying to work out, how do we discuss these things? How do we wrap our minds around them? How do we wrap our arms around people? How are we best advocates for people, allies, or whatever people need us to be, which is usually just a matter of stepping out of the way, right? But one of the things that you wrote in there that I want you to read, and I thought it was great, was, and you did the ceremony before too. I saw this, the ceremony performed, with Boyd, Peterson, who's a dear friend of both of ours, when Boyd and Zina announced their, well, it was kind of an official divorce ceremony that they went through, and you were the officiant of their, divorce ceremony. And I saw that you kind of quoted that a little bit in your Facebook post. So can you just read to us? Because I think it was really this is what you guys should be doing kind of advice from Geralyn Hasselpool, and don't hold back.
Oh gosh. So you're saying I get to say the swears?
Yeah, you get to say the swears. This is our deep cuts, Geralyn.
Deep cuts. Well, I now have to pull it up. I didn't know that you were going to make me do this. Basically, like, when I did the Boyd and Zina divorce, I felt like there are two people who loved each other deeply, but the marriage couldn't work because of sexual orientation. And they had tried so hard. And I felt like, as their friend, so I asked them to make vows to each other because I thought that was fun. But then I also felt like all of us, because all of us have been so involved in that relationship over the years, that perhaps it was wise that we also made vows to them. So I asked everyone there attending to say, to repeat after me, we promise to honor and cherish your diverging paths. We respect and protect your lives together and apart, and we won't talk shit about you behind your backs.
And I think, and I mean, gosh, the third point might be the most important point. I mean, obviously we need to honor and respect, but holy cow, people, calm down.
I think people are upset and everyone is entitled to their feelings. So I know that there's a lot of people who have experienced deep pain because of this narrative. So, I mean, I don't want to tell people to calm down, but I also feel like we have to understand too, that here are two people, Josh and Lolly, who are in a great deal of pain and have been in a great deal of pain and are finding a way to work this out.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Geraldine.
No. I should say too, Josh and I go way back. So when I posted my thing, I had known in advance that this was happening. And I'm protective of him like a brother. So that colored obviously my reaction, but anyway.
So let me say this, and I've mentioned this a few times, but I think it's important to say it again. One of the most valuable lessons that I've ever learned came when I couldn't describe how I was feeling. And I heard this stupid song by, I think it was AWOL Nation. The song was Kill Your Heroes. And mm-hmm. I think the reason why it was important to me was because that's what I've been wanting to tell people for so long. We set up a lot of different heroes and a lot of different people, and we set them up on pedestals of narratives that we've built for them. Yep. And it's going to happen that either A, that's just not who they are, or B, you're going to encounter them and you're going to wait a minute, that's not who I thought you were. And so I would say this lovingly and respectfully to Josh, but so many people just need to kill this hero image they have of Josh, not because he's done anything wrong, but mostly because you can't take his story and make it yours, because it's not your story to make. You can't sit there and go, well, I think it's just so sad that they're getting a divorce, because I'm sitting here going, but it's not your, how would you like it if you were going through a tragic situation and someone was like, well, I think Brant should have done this and this and this. It's, you don't know the full story of anything that's going on. And so I think it's, and you know, Brian and I are Mormon studies nerds, so we talk about this all the time in the context of like church history and stuff like that. Sure. But it's in so many other situations, whether it's, and I will say this applies to a lot of people. I'm not calling any one individual out, but prominent online Mormon personalities, or people within the LDS church who hold a position of leadership, or people within your own area, or whatever. Like, we just need to be okay with the fact that, you know, especially with so much of us interacting either through websites or podcasts or Facebook posts or blog posts, we don't know them. And so the only thing that we really can do in this situation is take a step back and say, hey, you're going through some stuff.
Yep.
It sounds like it's difficult. And guess what? The only thing that I could do is just be here for you if you need me. If not, I'm going to give you your space and I'm going to let you say what you want to say. And it's not my, I don't know the full story. So I'm just going to let you do your thing.
Absolutely. I'm thinking there's a, go ahead.
Are you worried about this getting weaponized at all, Geraldine?
Oh yeah. Heck yeah.
Has it started already? Or has the internet, I mean, I'm using you to take like the temperature of the internet, which is always a little dicey, but like, has the internet been cool with this, or are people starting to, you know, ramp up their different machines and starting to go into their different camps and everything?
You know, I feel like people are relaying, you know, there's the North Star group, which, I mean, mixed orientation marriage is what they, believe in. A lot. I shouldn't say that I know exactly what they believe in, but that is, a lot of people in the North Star group are in mixed orientation marriages. So, and I feel like there's people who are defensive of their own marriage. I can't say, the only thing I can say that the ugly part is people saying that this is all because Josh wants to sin.
Gosh, you got to be kidding.
And that he's being, that they're being led by away by Satan into apostasy. Like, those are the ugly comments. There are even uglier comments, but I feel like that the majority of the ugly comments are in that vein. Like, this is how you know that he's been, you know, led astray by Satan.
That's like, nobody knows what Josh is going through. No one knows it. This is why the internet's the worst. It really is.
It is. And, you know, and it's straight people who are saying that. Like, I mean, if anybody could make it work, it was Josh and Lolly, right? They had known each other since they were children. He'd been very open with her. They had gone into this with their eyes wide open. They're both therapists. So, I mean, it's, yeah, so.
You know, at the same time, I feel like this is a cautionary tale that if we as Mormons, as straight cis Mormons, come across these stories that are a little bit unusual or that that conform with our idealized, pattern of marriage or whatnot, maybe we shouldn't be using this as some sort of a template for everybody else out there. So maybe we, as Mormons who spread this stuff around, kind of put a certain amount of social expectations on them that probably wasn't very healthy for their marriage. I can't imagine that kind of pressure, that now that you're kind of this mini celebrity of, look, here's this mix, this mixed marriage, this mixed orientation marriage, and it's working. I can't imagine that didn't put a little bit of pressure on them to say, well, I guess now we got to make it work because, we're these celebrities not speaking of themselves, they were these celebrities, but people are looking at us. People are watching us.
Depending on us.
People are depending. And that can't be healthy.
And it wasn't just Mormons watching them either. Like, it was, I believe they were on Ellen. There was a reality television show on VH1 about them. I mean, even now, BuzzFeed's top article yesterday anyway was a Mormon gay man who famously was married to a woman is now divorcing.
We covered that in the main show, and man, that was just the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shame on them.
But I'll say this, though. I think that just as much as we should not be using the Josh and Lolly story as a the original 2012 story as like, see, gays, this is how you do it. You just got to do it this way and it works. But I would, and I think this leads back to just this thought that I've had. And obviously I'm coming at it from a position of a lot of privilege. I don't have to worry about what they're going through, but there's also a part of me that says, just because, even if you were someone who was really looking up to Josh and Lolly saying, okay, if they can do it, then we can do it. Oh, it didn't work for them. That doesn't mean, my position is we all just need to be doing what works for each other. Maybe the best thing is not to always, and I know we have a problem with this in the church because it is very foundational to what we are. We're always looking towards examples or people who are doing it right. And one of the things that I've learned about being an adult, granted, I've only been on this earth for 34 years, so you and Brian are like dinosaurs compared to
you're
me, right?
You're such a baby.
But one of the things I've learned is it doesn't matter how old you are, whether you're my age or your age, Geraldine, or, damn near extinct like Brian, like nobody has their stuff together. Like, everyone's faking it at this whole adult thing. And I think that's the hardest part is we keep looking to people like, oh, okay, so you got it going on, so you're good, and I'll follow you, and oh, wow, it didn't work for you. Obviously can't work for me. It's like, no. And I think that was the point of what Josh was trying to say is, this is what's working for us right now, and this is what we have to do for ourselves. And I'm sorry if I hurt you in the past, for those of you who went down this path thinking that this is what you need to do. But the other side of it that I got from it was, but you need to do what works for you, whether that's stay in, whether that's separate. It's not his... I think he would say, if he was with us today, it's not his position to say you need to do it one way or the other.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He would say that. There's one of my favorite quotes, and I learned it from an episode of Criminal Minds, was...
The bastion of all knowledge, obviously.
Right? It's from a guy called Elbert Hubbard, who said, if men could only know each other, they would neither idolize nor hate.
Good old L. Ron Hubbard.
No, Elbert Hubbard.
Oh, Elbert.
Oh, sorry about that.
Different Hubbard.
I know.
It's his brother.
Hubbard. I don't know who. I don't know how.
Read the quote again because I got distracted with L. Ron.
It wasn't L. Ron.
I know. That's what I got distracted by. So read the quote again.
Okay, the quote again. If men could only know each other, they would neither idolize nor hate.
Yeah, that's true. You know what I often say, and you can quote me on this, is we're all making it up as we go.
Here's my quote. Everything is awful. So
everything is awful. Yeah, it's like the opposite of the Lego movie over there.
Yep. I do want to say, I do want to point out one thing that has happened in the progressive Mormon area around this Josh and Lolly story. And that is that the day that news broke on the 25th, of course, all over Mormonism, people were talking about the family and how is the family staying together and doing all that. The very next day, the church released the statement on the DACA, the Dreamer Act, and was like, well, we kind of hope families can stay together. And there was crickets. So, like, we got to talk about which families. When we say all families, we got to mean all families.
And Geraldine, it's interesting you bring that up. That leads into the poem that Heather Bergman read on the show earlier today, where she basically said, we're good with it if you're a little different, but no, not too different. Not everybody, just the people that we're comfortable with. And that's it. Geraldine, I want to thank you for staying up late with us. We really appreciate it. Thank you for being the inaugural guest on the Mormon News Report, Deep Cuts. You've got that in your...
Wait, can I come back sometime and tell you made-up celebrity, Mormon celebrity gossip?
You know, we should do that. We should totally have this be a celebrity gossip watch.
Yeah. this should be like online Mormonism insider baseball, that with references that only a select few people would understand.
Yeah, I mean, he already referenced David Bakovoy's barbecues earlier at the beginning of this, which is like three people are going to get. So, right. But
we can call it Mormon Gossip American
Fork. Mormon Gossip.
Yeah. All right. Well, Geraldine, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks All for right. having me.
Thanks for everyone for listening to the inaugural, the first edition of the Mormon News Report Deep Cuts, and we will talk to you again after a while.